morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Great to see everybody. I think it's been a couple weeks since I've been here. And so I've been thinking about the various shapes that our practice takes. As I wended my way through the last couple weeks, each circumstance really different. Is that better?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Should I do this one?
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Good. So I think 2 weeks ago we were at Jikoji, up in the trees. Some of us were. Many of us. Mm-hmm. In the quiet. So the only sounds were the rain and the sound of the horn and the sound of people's feet on the floor at the meditation hall. Occasional laughter as we tried to figure out where we were supposed to stand during service. So those were the sounds. That was the experience. Then I was off to Berkeley, driving 880, teaching, meetings, an academic conference, completely different experience. Lots of words, lots of people, lots of ideas, conversations, chock full of words. Then Shinchu and I went to Santa Fe to visit an oldest friend. So airplanes, airports. We've had a lot of airports lately. The beauty of the landscape. Our friend's grandchildren dyeing Easter eggs and then hunting for them over and over again. So one would plant the Easter eggs and then everybody else would look for them, and then after they found them another one would plant them and then everybody would look for them. And it just kept going on and on and on. Everybody had a lot of fun. And we went to the Church of St. Francis in Rancho de Taos, which many of you may have either seen yourselves in person or seen images of it in paintings. It is so beautiful. It is perfect in some way that is indescribable. Went to a museum and the Museum of Native American History. That land is saturated and alive with diversity, with the history of oppression, with violence and beauty. It's in your face there. So at this museum, before you entered the exhibit, there was this hanging on the wall where two white cones kind of things that you would put up to your ear. And one of them was a Navajo man, basically speaking first in Navajo. Come sit over here. And then when you translated, then speaking in Navajo, so you had opportunity to hear that language, and then translated into English, basically telling what he was saying was, if you're an observant Navajo, you might want to consider whether you want to enter this space or not, because there are artifacts and things of the ancestors, and it's not a traditional thing to encounter those things. And the second one was a woman speaking Tewa, very different language. And listening to the gentleness of that language, the beauty of that language, I could have sat there. I mean, I didn't care whether she was reciting the phone book. It was so beautiful to listen to. But when they translated it into English, what she was saying was, please honor this place. Please bring your whole selves to this place. Don't just see it as an exhibit. Encounter what's here. Bring your heart, your mind, your body to meeting this place. And then slow down, basically. And then walking through the space with the words of this people's, the objects that people used and continue to use, I could really hear this woman's voice telling me, wake up, basically. And then the square in the downtown part of Santa Fe, which is filled with beauty and massive consumerism.
Yeah, exactly.
Both. So I was thinking, you know, what ties our practice together, being in all these different places, because, you know, I'm assuming your life, like mine, is complicated. There are diverse settings, situations, circumstances that you go through every day. Driving on the road, going to work, being present in relationships that are sometimes complicated, often complicated.
Yeah.
So how is this one practice? How is all of this one practice? Sitting on our cushion, driving on 880 or Highway 1 or whatever you do. This is a question I think we need to ask ourselves frequently. Where do we return to the teachings? How do we find ourselves returning to the teachings? What guides us to returning to the teachings? And how often is Tewa being spoken to us? How often do our lives come to us and say, wake up? You know, so there's like dual aspect to this. One is for us to keep close to teachings to remember. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But also, how often do we listen to what's being spoken to us by the circumstances of our lives? You know, it's like this bodhisattva was, you know, here I'm listening to this. And it's like the Buddhas and ancestors to me were like saying, hello, wake up, pay attention. Each situation offers us fully the opportunity to return and to express the way in each moment. So there's no place that the teachings don't reach. There's no place that's outside of practice. The question for us is always how. How do we return? How do we listen? How do we have this seamless practice? How are we taught? How do we hear this opportunity? Bringing our body, our hearts, our minds into this situation as it is. If we pay attention, the world speaks to us all the time. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. But we have to remember to pay attention, right? That's the hard part. And we have to pay attention in a very specific way. We can see things as at a distance, like an exhibit in a museum, right? These are called exhibits, not at this museum, but in many exhibits. Exhibits of what? So we can move through our lives observing these exhibits. Exhibit A, our desk at work, you know? A meeting, a freeway. So we can see things as an exhibit, we can recite facts, we can give you the details of something, but it doesn't touch us, it doesn't transform us. So the how of our awareness is what's important. We're not just getting through one exhibit A, exhibit B to the next thing. We have to listen to that speakerphone. So I think it was Katagiri Roshi that said, you know, God is always calling, but you don't pick up the phone. Your dharma gates are always there in front of you, but do you speed by to get to something else, or do you stop and actually enter? Are we touched? Are we taught? Are we transformed by this circumstance? Are we too busy getting to the next one? We bring this energy. It takes effort, right? It's not easy. It's easy to be sloth-like in one way or another, right? I was thinking of spiritual sloths. Although I don't want to disparage sloths. They're going at their own sloth space, right? That's what sloths are supposed to be, sloths. But we're humans. So we don't want to be spiritual sloths. And, you know, just go to sleep. But we don't want to also make everything so precious, you know. Have you ever seen, you know, you slow down and you're so mindful. And you turn an ordinary activity into something special. It's not something special. You know, when you're driving on the freeway, you need to keep up with the pace of traffic, right? Or you become a barrier. If you're going down, if you're walking on the sidewalk, there used to be a guy downtown that walked, who always wore pink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember him?
Yeah.
And an umbrella. Mm-hmm. And he would basically do Kinhin, walking meditation down the Pacific. Well, we can do that if we want, but if somebody's trying to get around us, you know, there's a way in which we work. If you're trying to get a meal out, you need to pick up the pace. So, you know, when we're serving in the Zendo, we walk briskly. When we're walking down the street, we pay attention. We move with all beings. We're moving with all beings at the pace of the circumstance. And we set that pace. We move at that pace with deep sacred attention to our being and to the beings that are around us. Dogen teaches us in the four embracing actions. It's sometimes called the four embracing actions or the four methods of guidance to the bodhisattva, Shishobo. These four are giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and identity action. Identity action, that's the one I want to talk about. It's central to all of them. So identity action means discovering the root sameness with oneself and others. What is the root sameness, the point of sameness in this circumstance? How do I act from that fundamental sameness? So this sameness doesn't erase difference. Instead, it includes it, respects it, honors it, is not impeded by it. When we know this deepest sameness, and sameness, by the way, we're not afraid of difference. We cherish it. Dogen says, identity action means not to be different, neither different from self nor different from others. Another way of saying that is identity action means non-difference. It is non-difference from self and non-difference from others. So it's interesting to think about this. What is non-difference from self? What does he mean by that? How are we different from self? How can we be different from self? That I think if we think about what is self, is that we are different from... How are we different? How do we struggle with? How do we pull ourselves out from? How do we not be separate from this deepest self? This self of no self. This self that is the complete interconnectedness, the complete arising of this moment. I think that what he's saying is, let's not be, don't be different from that self. As if we could. Really? You can't ever escape. It's like, you know, trying to crawl out of a pot. You can't ever escape being a part of what is. Even if you feel yourself to completely separate and isolated, that's just another aspect of the circumstance. The question is, how much are you suffering? And when we return to this non-difference from self, we're freed. And non-difference from others. Does it mean that I'm you and you are me? But how do we embed ourselves in the circumstance in such a way, or understand ourselves, or see ourselves, or open ourselves? How do we hear that voice of the woman speaking Tewa that says, don't see this as something separate from you. Be in it and of it. Be touched by it. So we say we try and be mindful, be aware, but identity action points us in the direction of how we are aware. We're not aware of things in a certain way, as if there's a barrier between us. We are aware with them. We listen to the voice of this circumstance calling us to be with it. Sometimes the voice of that circumstance can be in a foreign language, right? It feels like a foreign language. But we have to translate that into something that we understand. Recently, someone pointed out to me a Zen teacher on the East Coast who is deaf, and who has started, he has on YouTube, he has definitions in ASL of Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, different terms that he's developing and he's teaching to the deaf community at Gallaudet and other places on the East Coast. And I thought, what a beautiful effort to translate into another language these terms so that we can practice with them. And that's what we do. We translate these things, these teachings, into what speaks to us, what actually we can understand. Now, whatever language that is, it never captures the whole of it, right? But it points us in the right direction. It brings us to the right direction. So this identity action is central. We cultivate the ability to rest in, move from, this sense of self and other that embraces the whole. Dogen quotes Guanji, "The ocean does not exclude water, therefore it is vast. The earth does not exclude earth, that is why it is high, the mountain." So this kind of inclusiveness means that we are vast and inclusive. Katagiri Roshi said, "Identity action means to practice something with complete and full devotion." So it includes this heart aspect. All of our practice is something that we dedicate ourselves to with full devotion. And we are not separate from the object of devotion. What is the object of devotion? Our lives, all beings. It's not easy. But part of the non-easiness of it, or the difficulty, is that we don't know why it's not easy. Right? You hear these teachings and you think, well, right, it's simple. Just pay attention. Bring your heart to something. Wake up. Natural, right? What makes that difficult? Seems like it should be pretty simple, but it's not. It takes effort. It takes us remembering. So we are curious about that. Encountering the difficulty is part of the wholeness of the situation. The quality of devotion. Devotion has the quality of dignity, right? Aliveness. It takes place in the particularity of our day. It's bringing that quality to driving on 880 to the grocery store. What does it mean when you're picking up potato chips for the potluck to be completely devoted? I am completely devoted to finding the right potato chips. That's it, right? Or at a meeting when you're bored stiff. Or how? That's our way. In one of his Dharma Hall discourses, Dogen says, "Buddha ancestors turned 50,000 somersaults. The koan, our life, is manifested in 100,000 pieces. One blade of grass erects temples in the 10 directions. Without expectations, cloud and water monks manage to arrive." Okay, you want to hear that again?
Yeah.
"Buddha ancestors turned 50,000 somersaults. The koan of our life, the how of our life, is manifested in 100,000 pieces. One blade of grass erects temples in 10 directions. Without expectations, cloud and water monks manage to arrive." So Buddhas and ancestors, one way we can think about this is the Buddhas and ancestors are constantly like turning somersaults, like, pay attention. Can you imagine? Buddhas and ancestors turn 50,000 somersaults. That's a lot of activity. So we can take each of these apart and look at the roots of it, but I think it's really good just to encounter these teachings. This is a lot of activity, and one way to think of it is, oh, sentient being, please pay attention. I'm turning 50,000 somersaults. I'm right here. I'm right in front of you. Can't you see? Can't you see? The koan, the how of our life, he says, the koan is manifested in 100,000 pieces. One way to think of that is every detail of your life. The koan, the central question of our lives, is manifested in every detail. Do we hear it? Do we see it? One blade of grass erects temples. There's a whole story behind this, but the idea is that to place or pluck, point out one blade of grass is to erect a temple. That means just the simplest thing erects temples in the 10 directions. Just the simplest blade of grass. Just the simplest pencil in your pencil holder. Just the simplest movement. A smile, a turning towards, just the ordinary potato chip bag, erects a temple in the 10 directions, or not. In a way, there's no way it can't. In another way, do we see that? Do we encounter that? What does that even mean? It's not, again, it's just ordinary. The last line, I think, is quite pertinent to our discussion. Without expectations, cloud and water monks manage to arrive. Our expectations of what we think we're going to get, or what we think practice is, or what we think is going to happen, get in our way. We erect an expectation, and the reality of the situation is, it's like expectations shrink our vision down, and then you know how if you have a very small vision, it doesn't take very much to block it? You know? If you're looking through this little tiny thing, a pebble can block your vision. That's why we're always working to expand our vision, expand our awareness, expand our understanding. So without expectation, cloud and water monks, this is unsui, means you move through life like a cloud. You are like a cloud. You are constituted of the earth, the water. A cloud is an expression of all of the elements coming together. And it moves through the sky. A cloud and water monk manage to arrive. I really like that, because it's like, can you manage to arrive? You don't have to do it, in some spectacular form, but can you manage to arrive, fully arrive in this moment? With your heart and mind open, at least a little bit. It only takes a little bit. Without expectations, can you manage to arrive? This, I think, is what the woman was saying at the museum. Can you manage to arrive? Can you actually encounter what's present here without piling your expectations on it? So in the midst of difficulty, of beauty, of busyness, awkwardness, we manage to arrive. This is identity action. We manage to be of this situation with devotion. The thread of identity action, of devotion to realizing the way, bringing a certain quality of awareness, is one way of understanding how we cultivate practice in every circumstance in our life. We carry that and are carried by that in every circumstance. So I hope that you will pay attention to managing to arrive. And also, with some discipline, and again, I'll say it again, discipline means following what you love. Doesn't mean brutalizing yourself. You being a disciple of the way is discipline. So, bringing that energy so that you recall the teachings and you actively cultivate remembering the teachings. Take a phrase and put it on your dashboard. You know, put it in your wallet. Remember, prompt yourself. And at the same time, look to the circumstances of your life to hear the voices you might miss. Because they're, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are turning 50,000 somersaults all the time. So how can you hear that voice in the ordinary and maybe sometimes extraordinary circumstances that like are calling you back, teaching you? Thank you.